panel is the sober geographic. So that means moving while sober, maybe moving to try to get sober, or even interacting with people who have moved and are sober. So please give a warm welcome to Gray, our first panelist. Yes.
Hi guys, my name is Gray, I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank the committee. You guys are doing an awesome job. And Katie, thank you for asking me to share today. This is my first panel, so bear with me. I'm a little nervous. Maybe I would have fit in yesterday's anxiety one. A little better. But anyways, I talked to my sponsor yesterday and told him I was going to be sharing at this, and he said, go with the book. So I'm going to start off with an excerpt from page 101. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must not shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their home houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland Ice Cap. Even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. So, right there, it says simply, if you're spiritually fit, you can do whatever you want to do. You can go anywhere. It took me a while to understand that. I've been an alcoholic pretty much my whole life, even before I ever had alcohol. I could trace it back to when I was a kid, some of my actions, not being okay with myself. And alcohol was a fantastic solution until I started having negative consequences. And I remember I was using alcohol and some herbal alcohol in early high school, and I just started getting so stressed out, and my life was starting to become unmanageable early on. And I wanted to move, and I almost talked my parents into moving to Denver because I thought getting away from Tucson, which is where I was living at the time, would be good. You know, that was my mindset. If I can just get away from these people I'm hanging out with, you know, and what I was doing in one place, I can start fresh. Looking back on that, I'm glad I didn't, because I don't think that would have been a solution for me. Later on in life, you know, I started getting my act together, and I was sober for a few years. At least I thought I was sober. I was just drinking and smoking pot, drinking on the weekends. But looking back, I obviously was not sober. But eventually, I decided I did need to get out of Tucson. I was going to go to a treatment center I had gone to previously in Tucson. And I didn't want to do the same thing again because it didn't work the first time. It was not 12-step based. You know, I learned a lot about myself, you know, and I learned a lot about the disease. And I learned some of the principles that are in the 12 steps. Like, we went over some resentments, you know, but it wasn't a spiritual program. So I got out of that treatment center, and I thought I knew everything I needed to know about myself and my disease, and that I could be okay. And for a while, I did just that. I did well, you know, but I wasn't really happy. You know, everything started to crumble inside me. I started getting restless, irritable, and discontent, and right before I had a year and a half off of everything, I had one beer. I thought I could have one beer at a pool party in Tucson. And I did. I had one beer. 2 weeks later, I had another beer, followed by shots of tequila. And 2 weeks after that, I did some other stuff. And a few months after that, I was just down and out. I was miserable. I hated my life. I was at what they call the jumping off point, not knowing if I wanted to just end it or if I really wanted help. And so I went back to that treatment center that I had gone to the first time, and they tried to keep me in there, but I still had money in my pocket, so they tried to lock my car in the gate. It's like a ranch, and they shut the gate and wouldn't let me out. And so I left my car there, and I got a cab home and got my van. Some of you know my van. It's out there. And I drove down to South Tucson, and I proceeded to drink for about another week till I ran out of everything. And then I became desperate, and I had that willingness at that point. It was the exact point where a solution was shown to me when I had the willingness. Because solution can be shown to people, but if they're not willing, nothing is going to happen. That's my experience. And at that point, I was able to get in touch with someone up in Prescott. And I had never really, I've been through Prescott one other time, and you know, and that was with my mom coming back from a trip to Sedona, but I never really spent time there. So I can say I've drank all over the state of Arizona, but I've never had a drink or anything else in Prescott, which is pretty cool. So I was able to go up there, and I was willing to do so, and I was willing to surrender myself. And so I went into treatment, but I won't credit treatment for keeping me sober. You know, it was a good, safe environment for me to do the steps, to work the steps, to get a sponsor, because I had done treatment before and it didn't keep me sober. It's the steps that will keep me sober. I'm not saying treatment's a bad thing. It's a great place to be if you want to get sober, but the steps and my experience is what has helped keep me sober today, and having a connection with a higher power of my own understanding. So I came in, and at first, you know, I was kind of slacking a little bit. I had that contempt prior to investigation. I never really truly believed in a God. You know, I was kind of agnostic. I thought there might be something out there, but I've seen God work in my life and the lives of my fellows, and I see it every day, and it's incredible. So I cannot deny that there's something out there, and I'm glad I'm able to see that. And as far as geographics go, the reason I read this, you know, assuming we're spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. You know, we can move wherever we want to move. And I do work in treatment, as many of you know, and I used to do family communications for the treatment center, so I talked to a lot of families, and they called me after some of our clients went home. And in my experience, talking to these people, and sometimes the clients who come back, you know, some of them are able to get sober and move and stay sober. And those are the people that you can see working a spiritual program. They're the people that are at meetings. They have service commitments. They're actually working with their sponsor and working a you know, doing thorough four steps and actually making amends, not taking amends trips and making amends to their parents and hanging out. You know, they're going around. They're staying busy. Their feet are moving. And, you know, when they go home, and I've talked to them, when they go home, they, or wherever they move, they immediately, or if not ahead of time, they find meetings. They get in touch with possible sponsors, or they already have a sponsor ready when they move there, and they get home groups. They get service commitments, and they get plugged in. The people that don't stay sober when they move, I've talked to them because they keep coming back, and they think they're all right. You know, they may have worked the steps, may not have, and they don't get plugged in, and they don't keep their feet moving in this program. And that's just my experience. I haven't actually moved in sobriety. I love Prescott, and I do hope to move sometime. So at least I can see from others, you know, what the best way to move is, and, you know, just work this program, this spiritual program, you know. So I have another excerpt right here. It's, you know, 10-step promises, which I think are really cool. It's pretty much they're saying we can do whatever we want when we're sober. If we want to move, you know, to Abu Dhabi or Japan or, you know, Morocco, we can do that. And if we're working a spiritual program, even if we go to meetings and we don't understand the language people are speaking in, it's still the language of the heart, and we understand each other even if we can't communicate. You know, and one other thing, you know, I've traveled around a little bit, and, you know, I've been to some meetings outside of Arizona, and I feel at home wherever I go. If I find a meeting, I am at home. You know, our family, this is a family that we have here, and wherever we go, AA is everywhere, pretty much. You know, and it continues to grow, and I think that's an incredible thing. We're part of a huge spiritual movement today. I mean, this thing started less than 100 years ago, and there's millions of members worldwide. I mean, it's very progressive. And for us to be able to go anywhere and have that safety net and be safe and protected through this program, and its fellowship is incredible. So I don't have too much more. I'm just going to end with 10-step promises. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we'll find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. That is our experience. That is how we would react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So, I mean, right there, that says a ton. You know, work a spiritual program, and we can do whatever we want to do and continue to be happy. Once again, thank you, Katie. I'm extremely grateful to be part of this and to be at ASCII Pod 2015 in Flagstaff.
Thanks, Gray, and let us please welcome Julia, our second panelist.
I'm Julia, I'm an alcoholic. I came here to visit with my daughter, and this is the only way I could do it. Punk. Anyway, I met Gray coming up here. Used a one-liner about cease fighting everyone and everything, and you end with it. So that's what I'm doing. I've been sober. November will be 11 years. I've moved. I've been sober almost 11 years in November, and I've been in program six or seven. All right. I did one move sober from Mississippi to Italy, and I got sober in Mississippi due to her. She took me to a bottom, and I'm grateful. So I left Mississippi with the family, and off we went to Italy, sober, living life, enjoying the beaches, having a grand old time. And no matter where you live, you know, life will come and get you. It'll punch you out. And so it did. And so, without a program sober, I became obsessed with alcohol, drugs, and suicide. And of course, all the lying that goes with the disease. Because you don't dare tell a doctor or anybody that you're wanting suicide, they'll lock you up. And I refused to be locked up. So I came clean with a counselor, and they sent me into AA. And I went to AA because I really didn't want to die. And while in AA in Italy, I started the steps, started reading the book, could not get a individual sponsor because we were transient. All right, everybody was in and out. So there was flat out no singular sponsor. And they just loved me till I quit wanting to die, basically. And that went, and her dad had no clue, really. So I went into AA. We were transferring back to the States to Fort Worth. I was non-suicidal. I was taking my med and doing AA meetings. We had them three times a week there. And I had to move. So I got online and found the closest meeting to the house that we were moving into, which was called the Golden Triangle of Fort Worth, one of their older meetings. Not a good place. All AA meetings, and this was an AA meeting versus an Alano club, I have found are not equal. Okay. Yeah, you can find sobriety in them, but there's being healthy and there's being unhealthy. That's like every alcoholic in here is in different stages of their sobriety. And their behaviors will match whatever. Okay, and I'm talking about me, not you. So in Fort Worth, this Golden Triangle was my home group. And I picked up a sponsor there, yada yada. And the group just was killing me. We had a lot of crazy behavior, and so I had to leave it. And so I picked up and traveled a few more miles down the road, Fort Worth. There's meetings all over the place. And found a meeting that I liked, you know, that I felt secure in, that you knew people had your back. For me, it's all about having your back. Fort Worth rolls around. I made it through the 12 steps. I went through four separate sponsors. And to get through those 12 steps, my third sponsor says, "Hey, I cannot help you anymore, chick. You need to find someone else, because I had other issues." And so I got another sponsor, and I was telling Gray, since coming into AA, I've actually learned to acquire and hang on to friends. All right, military lifestyle, you drop them every 3 years, start fresh. And so I've learned how to hang on to them, and it's something you learn. Yeah, something people who don't move already have figured out how to do. People that move all the time don't get that. So nowadays in Arizona, I'm corresponding with Fort Worth. I'm corresponding with the people from Italy. What I have found in moving in sobriety is that I have to have a sponsor that lives in the fucking same city I live in, or damn well close. Because I can lie like hell over a phone. I can lie on a computer. I can lie to your face, but unless I hear it while I'm talking to you, if I'm telling you a big whopper that I happen to believe, I'm not going to know it. It has to be a sponsor to the face where you can hear what the hell's going on in your head. My head, not yours. It's a crazy place. I volunteer. I volunteered in Italy. I volunteered in Fort Worth. I took service commitments like you're saying. My current meeting place is an Alano club. I don't particularly like Alano clubs, but my service commitment is to the frickin' Alano club. And it keeps me plugged in. I don't use that phrase, but that's a good phrase. Right now, I'm in transition. I'm staying in this house that I'm in, but I'm transitioning geographically in my life. And to do that successfully without wanting the drink, without wanting the drug, without wanting anything but a relationship with God, I got to stop and pause and say, "Hey, thanks. Keep me sober, God. Don't help me stay sober. I don't got this. Keep me sober." It's 11 years, almost 10 and a half years, definitely, without a drink or a drug, and I don't have it. And I won't have it if I have to move again. My higher power has it. Somebody talked about miracles. Living miracle, you know, should be dead. Sorry, kid. That's all I got.
Thanks, Mom, and Pete. Welcome to our final panelist, Kareem.
Hey, Kareem.
My name is Kareem. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kareem.
My sobriety date is May 21st, 2010. So I just celebrated 5 years a couple months ago.
Congrats.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me. So beautiful to be up here. My geographic, I've been doing geographics since I can remember, even drinking. I'm a runner. It's what I do. I get bored. You know, all of these excuses that we have make a geographic. In sobriety, my first geographic was I was about 3 years sober, and I just got this itch up my ass, and I didn't want to be in Flagstaff anymore, and I was like, I'm going to move to the city, so it's a good idea. And so I moved to Tempe, and I moved in with my friend, and I knew what I had to do. I tried to go to meetings in Tempe and in Scottsdale. I talked to some people that I knew in the program to kind of get connected. I was feeling good, checking out different meetings. Of course, they're different from Flagstaff. I got sober in Flagstaff. And in Flagstaff, everything is just so close-knit. You're like one big family. So going from that and knowing everybody, going to the city, it's completely different. Not knowing anybody, feeling alone. All of my anxiety started to come up, that fear of being welcomed and just feeling like I fit in, like I don't fit in. And just trying to meet people. You know, I would introduce myself as an out-of-towner. My friend down there would introduce me to women in the program, and I would, you know, give them a call if I was having trouble, meet up for coffee. And a couple women that I met for coffee, and then I didn't hear from them anymore. And that was it. And I was like, okay, this is weird. And then I would go to meetings, and then I wouldn't go to meetings. And then life just got too hard, so I came back to Flagstaff, and of course got plugged in, found a home group, started sponsoring. I joined ASCIPA, got involved with that. You know, life was great. Had a great job, had a place to stay, totally plugged into the program, you know, 100%. And then I got that itch, and I applied for a job in the Valley a couple months ago, and I moved to the Valley, and this time I knew what I had to do different. I had a job, whereas last time I didn't have a job. I had a place to stay, whereas last time I kind of had a place to stay, but it didn't last. I knew I had to go to meetings. I started to get connected with people that lived in the Valley who could introduce me to people in the program. So I moved to the Valley. I started going to meetings in Scottsdale, and I would go to the 6 o'clock on Mondays, and then I found another meeting on Sundays, which was a 5:30 meeting. I actually got asked to speak at that meeting my first couple weeks being down there, and I started to feel that at-home feeling, you know, feeling welcome, introducing myself to people. I think being able to share my experience, strength, and hope with people really helped. So I started getting phone numbers, started going to meetings. I had a set meeting on Sunday at 5:30. I had a set meeting on Monday at 6 o'clock. And, you know, like it was mentioned, you know, life happens. I work Monday through Friday. Life just started to get, you know, just started to get crazy, and I started to notice in myself that I was starting to make excuses. Like, I don't want to drive all the way north to Scottsdale to catch a meeting, or I'm not going to have time. You know, I'm going to hit rush hour. You know, and luckily for me, I was able to catch my old behaviors. And I still keep in contact with my sponsor in Flagstaff. If I was having trouble, or I would call people that I knew in the Valley, be like, hey, I'm having a hard time, can we meet up? Or I would try to find a meeting. And lately, I found a meeting on Camelback, just off of Central, that I've been going to Tuesday and Thursday. And then there's another meeting on Wednesday night. It's a step study meeting that I really like. So I'm trying to get in touch. I'm trying to get connected again. And for me, it's kind of hard. And I was up here about a week or so ago, and I went to an 8 o'clock meeting, and I heard somebody say that, you know, it doesn't matter what people think, you know, you're there for you. And I have to remember that. I'm there for me. I'm not there for anybody else. I'm there for my sobriety. Because I know for me, if I don't go to meetings 4 or 5 days a week, I start to get complacent. And once I get complacent, then I start to go down the rabbit hole. And I don't want to go down the rabbit hole. And that for me is, it's dangerous, because a lot of my friends that are in the valley, they drink. And it's hard, and they know I don't drink, so it's not like they pressure me or anything. But I pray to my higher power every morning. I say thank you when I go to bed. I'm just trying to get into that routine of reading my big book, 86 and 87, when I wake up. And just trying to get back to basics, pretty much. Just trying to get back to basics and still holding on to that willingness, you know, and trying to put it into perspective as if I was a newcomer again. What do I need to do? What did I do back then to stay sober? So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm super grateful I'm sober today. I'm grateful I haven't had the desire to take a drink despite everything that's happened in my life. But I'm thankful that I have support in and out of these rooms. And I'm just super happy to be here, and that'll pass.